Okay. We are still in Perek of Chet. Excellent. Really? Ooh, Wednesday really has that numbered Monday. Now we're really in trouble.
Hey, Sylvia, we better.
There you go. Oh, even that number's now. Even that number's now. Maybe we could just do this once, period, and forgetting you have to do this twice. No? Huh? Bob's staying conspicuously silent. All right. Okay, Monday. You're in serious trouble now.
Oh, boy. We go back to Monday. What happened to everybody? What happened to everybody in our Monday morning?
It's down there if you're looking for them. If you're looking for them.
Sylvia and I.
The fun part is you get to see people that you listen to on podcasts.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
All right. Fair enough. All right, so we should all be on the same page, more or less. More or less, I've been trying. The last thing we did was, I think we read through the rest of the Perek. And we also read through Perek Lamed Aleph, which is the battle of Har Gilboa, where Shaul and his sons die on their swords. And one of the questions we've been struggling with in this last piece of this description of the Perek is a kind of overall or overarching question as to how to assess Shaul HaMelech, how to kind of present Shaul, how to perceive Shaul. And one of the things that we've noticed is that for the most part, the Sefer has been very critical of Shaul and presented him almost like if there was an overarching theme that permeates all of the stories of Shaul from the beginning of his downfall until now, which was really from almost from the word go. Almost from the first coronation when he was cowering out of sight because he didn't want to do it, right? We have this element of fear that permeates the story of Shaul. He certainly asserts himself in the story of Yavesh Gilad that we saw. And then from the Battle of Michmas, a little bit we saw some of the elements. Yonatan, who runs into action and runs to start the battle, Shaul is not. But where it really takes a head is the Battle of Goliath. In the Battle of Goliath, you find that this towering giant of a man by the name of Shaul, who was supposed to be the warrior of the people, is immobilized by fear and can't act, and David has to enter into the picture. And from that point forward, the common theme that runs through much of Shaul's life is one of fear. Fear and weakness towards the people, but also afraid of the people, right? But certainly afraid of his enemies. And this fear is reflected in the phrase, Vashem Sara Me'im Shaul, this Ruach Elokim, this Ruach Hashem, this Spirit of God that has been removed from Shaul. Throughout Sefer Shoftim, that's a phrase that's used to describe a Shofet who's inspired by a moment of courage, of strength. Ruach Gavura Min Kadam Hashem, so the Targum translates Ruach Hashem. This sense of strength before God, and suddenly with this Ruach Hashem being removed from Shaul, Shaul is overwhelmed by a bunch of characteristics, emotional challenges that can be described as melancholy, depression, paranoia, and ultimately what I think is the real overarching issue, which is fear. And that's not... And that comes to a head in this perek, where on three different... Good morning. Evening out Monday and Wednesday here. When that is described in three different places, where it said in our perek, in Perek of Chet, where it says that Shaul was afraid. From the very beginning of Pasuk, Hey, Vayira, Vayecherad, Libo. Right, that Shaul was afraid when he saw the camp of the Plishtim, that led him to his search for some communication with God. Didn't work So he turns to Eshet Ov in order to bring back the spirit of Shmuel. You see it again in Pasuk Tetvav, where Shmuel confronts Shaul, and he says to him, Tsar li me'od, I was distressed, afraid, because the plishtim are frightening me, and Me'alokim tsar me'alai, God has abandoned me, and that also is reflected in this sense of fear. V'lo anani, gam benevim, gam b'chalamot, I didn't know what to do. And in Pasuk Chaf, after his vision with Shaul, with Shmuel, where Shmuel says to him he's going to die in battle, Pasuk Chaf, Vayimeher Shaul vayipol milok komoto arza vayira ma'od midivrei Shmuel. He literally collapses into a heap on the ground. Milok komoto, the emphasis on his height that has now collapsed into the ground in a heap. He is really overwhelmed, immobilized by this fear. And that has been the overarching characteristic of Shaul from day one. That's how it's described. Now, at the same time, we sort of began to get a glimpse of some sort of other side to Shaul, certainly not the overemphasized piece. The emphasized piece in this parak is certainly his fear. His mobilization. He can't even eat. Right? In the aftermath of the vision, he can't even eat. He's so afraid. But then the parak ends where the Balatov and his servants come to him and they say, listen, you're the king, you need to eat, you need to have strength. He goes, eat something. And he does. And the message of his, in the end, where he takes something to eat and it gives him strength, vayochelu, vayakumu, vayelchu balaylahu, where he does recuperate enough to regain some of his strength, continues into Perek Lamed Aleph, where he goes into that battle. And if he's really so mobilized by fear, so he would just kind of collapse, and that would be the end of him. But he doesn't. In fact, he does go into battle and takes a certain amount of courage to be able to lead your people into battle, knowing that you're going to die. On the other hand, in battle, what happens? The moment the tables are turned and the plishtim gain the upper hand, Shaul and his sons commit suicide. They fall on their own swords in order not to fall into the hands of the plishtim. And that can be seen from one of two perspectives. Again, same issue, right? Is he, because he's afraid of the battle, does he fall on his own sword? Is that an act of cowardice? Or is it an act of courage? Unclear. And easily read in both ways, right? We could easily see Shaul in that moment acting in a kind of a cowardly way. If you compare some of the other kings of Israel who led the people into battles knowing they were going to lose, or at least high chance that they were going to lose, and wounded in battle, Ahab being the most famous, right? He's wounded in battle, and yet, in order not to dishearten the people, he gets his people to prop him up in his chariot. I think I mentioned this last week. Prop him up in his chariot so that the people see him still fighting for them, even though he's literally got an arrow in his back. He bleeds out, leads to death that way, but he manages to keep the battle going until the end of the day in order to sacrifice his own life for the sake of his people. That's a hero. That's a king. Right? And that's we're talking about Ahab, who is a complex personality, but certainly right, not one who we typically see in a positive light. Whereas Shaul, the moment the battle turns against him, Shaul commits suicide together with the sons, falls on their sword. So it's unclear whether that's an act of gevura or an act of pachad. Is that an act of heroism because he doesn't want to be taken by the plishtim, doesn't want to be captured by them, he doesn't want to become a symbol of their success, or is it part of the overarching theme that we have seen in Shaul all along, one of pachad? I would leave that as an open question, but I'm going to hear an argument to the contrary in a moment from a lawyer.
I'm sorry, maybe I'm confused, but I didn't ever thought suicide in these circumstances, would suicide even be permissible?
So that's a huge discussion, right? So that is a subject into itself, which I actually did not prepare for, or as far as this curriculum goes. Maybe we'll do a subunit and address that question by itself. It's a major machloket Rishonim, whether Sha'ul is a paradigm that we can learn from that under these circumstances is permissible or not.
Is suicide ever permissible? Yeah.
There are, that's a machlokat Rishonim. In these kinds of circumstances, to escape the potential of being captured by an enemy, it's exactly that issue. It's a machlokat Rambam and Tosfot, major famous story of the Jews of York. Masada becomes a separate conversation, right? Masada didn't really have a rabbi to pass him for them, and the Jews of York did. Famous Tosfos Yontif. It's a complex question. But on the level of the Pshat of Tanakh, I'm going to leave it aside for now, because it's complicated halachically, but from the Pshat of the Perek, the basic question is, was he right or wrong? Let's put it in terms of the Perek, was it an act of cowardice or was it an act of gevurah? Right. Whether it was right or wrong, leaving that aside, what was the motivation behind it? Which is much more the interest for now of this Perek of Tanakh. So, yeah? Ben?
I'd be so confused to say that's an act of strength. When you're leading an army and you're the leader and you fall on your sword and you've left everyone out there to good luck, guys, but I'm going, I'm out.
Yeah, but
that doesn't sound like strength.
But sometimes if the leader is dead, it's war ends.
Not in this case, though, unfortunately,
case.
Right? So I, Dickie, I would have to agree with you. I would say overall, it's a pretty consistent picture that we have seen in Sefer Shmuel, and given how consistent it is, my gut says to me, yes, he's falling on a sword. I think fits the overall character of Shaul's fear. I don't quite say coward, but certainly his fear. On the other hand, if the overwhelming evidence is 95% to reflect the fear of Shaul, you still have to give us 5% of credit to Shaul's strength of will to go into that battle in the first place, having just been told by Shmuel that he's going to die. I give him some credit for that.
For not running.
Okay, for not running. However, and this is where, so if we're going to put a vote out to this, 95% on one side, 5% on the other. Right? The problem here begins with virtually all of the Midrashei Chazal that seem to assess Shaul very differently. And so the question that we need to ask ourselves is, how did they see Shaul in the end, and why? Right? So take a look, for example. And I just gave out a source page, which we're going to work with for now. If you look at the epicenter of the discussion is this pasuk in Perek Aleph, in Perek Chavchet, which I actually recopied at the top of the page. Vayiten Hashem gam et Yisrael imecha biyad plishtim, umachar ata uvanecha imi. The core message Shmuel gave to Shaul was, this battle, you're going to go into this battle, right? This battle is going to be won by the Plishtim. God is going to give Israel into the hands of the Plishtim at this moment. The Plishtim are going to win. They're going to push Israel back. They're going to resettle in their cities. Right? And this is Israel at the north of the country, Emek Israel. So as a strategic battle, the loss of this battle is enormously complicated for Israel. It's going to take them years to regain the upper hand, and that's going to have to be led by eventually by David HaMelech. So that's number one. Machane Yisrael Yiten Hashem Biyad Plishtim. Number two, Machar Atah Uvanecha Imi. Shmuel, the deceased, says to Shaul, tomorrow you and your sons are with me. What does that mean?
Gone to.
Right? You brought me back from the grave. I'm going back to the grave. Tomorrow you and your sons are joining me. Right? Where? Right? In the grave. Now, on the pshat of it, if you're Shaul, right, what are you hearing? Tomorrow you go into battle, tomorrow you die. comes along Chazal in a host of midrashim, and it's interesting. It's a kind of an interpretation that gets quoted in a bunch of different contexts scattered throughout rabbinic literature, Gemara, Medrash, different midrashim, and see this statement, "Machar atah uvanecha imi," is a completely different message. Take a look, for example, at the Gemara in Brachas, source 2, and this one I gave you in translation as well. Amar Rabba Machinina Saba Mishmei Derav, Kol Ha'oseh Dvar Avera Umit Bayesh Bo, Mochlin Lo HaKol HaMonatav. If you do something wrong, but you have enough shame to recognize that you've done something wrong, that shame is the first step towards tshuva, and God will forgive you. From whom do we learn this? From Shaul. Vayomer Shmuel el Shaul, Lama yigestani la'alotti? Why did you bring me up? Vayomer Shmuel el Shaul, Vayomer Shaul, Tzar li miod uflishtim nechamim bi, ve'elokim esar mi alai, ve'lo anani od, gam biyad hanevi'im, gam b'chalamot, ve'kva'a lecha lo'odiyeni ma'aseh. So that verse we've seen before, that's the verse which Shmuel, in which Shaul says to Shmuel, "Why I'm distressed, I'm afraid, so I looked for God, God was not answering me, God was giving me the silent treatment, not answering me in dreams, not answering me but through the Nevi'im." And if you remember our discussion of that verse the first time, he leaves out a key phrase, which is, when he's talking to Shaul, when he's talking to Shmuel, he leaves out the fact that one of the efforts he went to engage God was the Urim V'Tumim, and the Urim V'Tumim stayed silent. That was an earlier verse. Here, when he quotes it, when he describes it to Shaul, when he describes it to Shmuel, he leaves out any reference to the Urim V'Tumim, and that's what the Gemara picks up on. Ve'ilu Urim V'Tumim lo ka'amar. Now, why doesn't he mention the Urim V'Tumim when he's talking to Shmuel? Because of right, mishum dekatle lenov yirakonim. Because Urim V'Tumim means he went to the Kohanim. You're going to tell me that he had the audacity, the chutzpah, to face the Kohanim after what he did to the city of Nob? So, of course, he tried, and the Kohanim of the Urim V'Tumim kind of just dismissed him. But to Shmuel, he doesn't even mention the Urim V'Tumim, which means that he is embarrassed by what he did. And that's how the Gemara understood it, that he's an element of shame, that he knew that he couldn't mention the Urim V'Tumim. Uminayin de'achilu lev Shemaya. And says the Gemara, how do I know that up in heaven they forgave him for this? Now that's a new twist. Shene'emar, ve'yomer Shmuel Shaul, machar ata uvanecha imi. Ve'omer Rav Yochanan, imi, when Shmuel says to Shaul, "Tomorrow you're with me," it means with me in a lichtige gan eden, in the upper echelons of paradise where Shmuel belongs, there Shaul will sit. Imi b'mechitzati. That's Chazal. Now, that Maimer Chazal of imi b'mechitzati. That when Shmuel says to Shaul, "You're going to come to me," meaning in my place in Gan Eden, not just the grave, but my place in Gan Eden, that Maimon Chazal is quoted over and over again. I'll show you three other places. For example, Mechitzati means my space, my Dalaramos, my special.
Is it related to
Mechitzati means within my domain. Within my domain, yeah, it's a different my side of the mechitza. If you want to look at it from that perspective, it's actually a borrowed term. Verse 3, source 3 is a pasuk in Breshit in Yaakov's blessings to his children. Shaul is from Sheva Binyamin. One of the psukim for Sheva Binyamin is Binyamin Ze'ev Yitraf. He is like a pouncing lion. Baboka Yochal Ad, in the morning he will consume forever, meaning his enemies. And in the evening, he'll divide the spoils. Says the Medrash Breshit Rabba in, again, totally different place. Right? This is a Medrash on a Pasuk in Breshit. Ma ze'ev toref v'chotef kach chataf binyamin tamachut, just as a lion, or ze'ev is actually a wolf grabs and consumes and tears, so binyamin grabbed the malchus. All right. Not grabbing a negative sense, but able to unite the kingdom together. One of the things it says about Shul back in Perek Yudale, that was a long time ago, right? Perek chapter 14, was that Shul united the kingdom together and he fought all the battles, north, south, east, and west, and expanded the boundaries of the land of Israel all the way up to the Euphrates. It's an extraordinary description of all the battles that Shul fought against Moab and Ammon and Plishtim and Aram and everybody, all the way up to the north. Ula erev yichalek shalal, and in the evening he'll divide up the spoils. Afo pi she'eriv shimsho alav she'nafal b'milchama, even though the sun set on his kingdom, namely he fell in battle, yichalek shalal, he can divide up the spoils. Meaning, chelko im tzaddikim beGan Eden. His portion is with the righteous in Gan Eden. Shechein Shmuel omer ata uvanecha imi b'mechitzati. Now, there's a bit of a story that skipped here. We went from chapter 14 where he fights all the battles of Israel to unite the kingdom into the largest boundary of an empire that is almost the size, if not larger, than the size that David HaMelech's kingdom will be, to chapter 28, when he falls in battle. Now, chapter 31. Right? There's a big jump in there. There's a lot of things that have happened over the years. But in this Medrash and Breshit Rabbah, we've skipped all of that. We've talked about his uniting the kingdom and fighting the battles to expand the boundaries to a large empire, and he falls in battle, but Shmuel says to him, you're going to find your place with me in Gan Eden. And what happened to everything in between? It's not in the Medrash. It's just extraordinary. Talk about historical revisionism. Right? You want to rewrite history, that's the way to do it. You take this story, you take that story, and you leave out everything in between, and you rewrite history. Right? It's and we'll go on. Source 5 is the only medrash I found that is critical of Shaul. And the critique of Shaul was for giving up too early. Didn't daven. He heard Shmuel say he's going to die, and he said, okay, that's it, he's going to die. He didn't take the opportunity to pray and to change that decree. That's a separate conversation. I'm going to skip it for now. But take a look at Source 6. Source 6 is, I'm going to, this is a Medrash Tanchuma in Parshat Emor. Again, totally out of place. Parshat Emor, 2 weeks ago, Chumash, Medrash Tanchuma. Quotes this Pasuk, Imi b'machitzati. Shmuel heard this and he fell on his face in fear. He was afraid. Remember, he had two people with him. So the Medrash says, identifies them by name as Avner and Amasar. Who they are, not our issue for now. So they said to Shaul, what did Shmuel say to you? Amalem Shmuel answered, Amar li lemachar at nachit lekrava v'nitzach. Tomorrow you're going out to war, and you're going to be defeated. Uvanecha mitmanim ravrav. You're going to be victorious, and your children are going to be appointed to. Or venitzachta, they're going to be nitzach, and you're going to be defeated. Amrish Lakish Batasha Kara Kadosh Baruch Hu Malach Eshar. So Kadosh Baruch Hu calls over all the malachim. And he says to them, "Bo e bria shabarati balami." You want to see the greatness of a human being? Look at the greatness of this individual. Normally, somebody goes to into a bar to have a drink. He doesn't take his children with him because he doesn't want them to see. Take note, okay? V'zeh, that's one of those moments where I like that quote. V'zeh, she'ored le'milchama, this one, Shaul, goes into war, knowing that he's going to die. V'yodeh she'u ne'erag, netoba nevimo, he takes his children with him. V'sameach al midat hadin she'pagad. And he rejoices over the judgment that he accepts willingly. I'm going to be sure the sichna mishem Rabbi Levi melamed shehera kodesh baruch hu leMoshe dodov v'doshav dodov v'shoftav dodov v'malachav. Moshe, famous story. Moshe is shown. Moshe Rabbeinu is shown this moment of nevuah. Every leader from Moshe on to eternity. And he showed him the moment of Shaul and his sons falling on their swords. Amar lefanav, Ribono shel Olam, Melech Rishon she'amod al banecha yidakeh b'cherev. The first king of Israel is going to fall by the sword. Amar le Moshe, li ata umer. Moshe, you're telling this to me? Why don't you tell that to the Kohanim that Shaul killed? You want to defend Shaul? Go and defend him to the Kohanim that he killed. And then the Medrash goes on to list all of the five major crimes that Shaul committed in his lifetime. So again, I have this critique. He committed five major crimes. Harag Nov Ira Kohanim, Chamal Alagag, Lo Shamal Shmuel, Sha'al Ba'ov, and Lo Damash Pasha. Five different crimes. All of the things we've seen up until now. Killing the Kohanim of Nov, sparing Agag, not listening to Shmuel right from the very beginning, seeking the idolatrous act of Ov, and not listening to God. But in the end, Shaul goes into battle. What does he do? He accepts the decree and he goes into battle. And Chazal say, Samach amidatati, he rejoiced. So, it's an extraordinary host of midrashim that, again, from a pshat perspective, at the end of how many years have we been studying Sefer Shmuel? A number of years. Right? We spent a lot of time looking at Shaul. If you had to give me one word to describe Shaul from chapter 14 till today, what would it be?
Insecure.
Crazy. Paranoid, depressed, crazy. Would it be heroic? No. That would not be the term we would use to describe him, right?
Flawed.
Okay? And yet, Chazal are insistent that this Shaul HaMelech is in Imi b'mechitzati will sit with Shmuel and Gan Eden for all eternity.
Did they say about all the kings?
No. The question I have is, were they totally disconnected from the pshat of Tanakh and just looking to kind of whitewash and a personality who's so flawed they wanted to paint him in a positive light? It's possible. Or does Chazal understand something we haven't yet addressed? Yes.
I'm disturbed by one thing.
You are disturbed by one thing, okay?
You want to tell me Shaul is going to accept the decree upon himself? That's one thing.
Well, the decree was on his children, too.
But it's on his children.
So is the decree.
I got that.
Right.
But it's one thing if you want to accept it for yourself, but not for your kids.
Well, so
I would, if it were me, any normal parent would say, I'm willing to take the bullet. I'll take the bullet, except that
you are an individual and Shaul is the Melech. And when you are the Melech, everything that you do, right or wrong, impacts generations to come. Look, in the end, it's a reality, right? The decree wasn't on Shaul and his sons. The decree was on all of Israel. Because the decree was that they would lose this battle because of Shaul. They're going to lose major cities. Tens of thousands of people are going to die. Right? Whole swaths of the Jewish people are going to be running from their land, east and west of the Jordan. So that's just the nature of Malchus. The responsibility of a Melech is you take your people into battle, you declare the responsibility of leadership. Prime Minister of Israel declares war and takes the people of Israel into war and lose the battle or don't win, who pays the price? The Prime Minister or the people? Right? It's the price of leadership. So when you're the Melech, everything you do trickles down. That's the decree. Like it or not, that's a fact.
If a Melech, once the Melech is overtaken, wasn't it always like the practice to then, you know, their whole family, that next king would go kill the, you know, the kids of that king?
Haven't had that precedent yet. Okay. Because it's like, you know,
okay.
Maybe amongst, we will, but, okay. But, look, nobody can, nobody, think about just, let's take a step back for a second. You can't tell me that nothing we do as parents doesn't impact our children positively or negatively, right? It's the reality. God forbid, a mother when she's pregnant doesn't treat her body healthfully in a manner that impacts the uterus. Impacts the child. Does the child deserve it? No, but that's just the reality. But in the case of a melech, that impacts a thousandfold. The melech's responsibility is to lead the people. So, it's a fact. Sometimes what we do impacts the people we lead. However, I want to go back to this issue. I'm bothered by this. I don't want to use the word whitewash, but I'm bothered by this attempt, perspective on Shaul. That seems to paint him in such a positive light. Accepts the decree. He heroically goes into battle with his sons, right? All as an act of gavura, as an act of the hero, with the picture of Tanakh as it's been painted or presented. Where is it coming from? Where is it coming from? Said what?
I heard you say it. Why?
What's he
talking about?
I have no idea.
Did you not say he's the first king?
He was the first king.
I don't think that's the issue.
No?
No, I don't think that's the issue. I think there's something textually that Chazal... Now, the answer... Here's where the problem begins, is that we learn Tanakh linearly. Okay? Which means that we present information as we receive it, because we're reading linearly. Chazal did not read Tanakh linearly, meaning they saw, this is kind of a mantra of mine that we've talked about so many times, they saw Tanakh holistically. And by doing so, there's a broader perspective or canvas that we don't always see.
But if you compare the good things that he's done and the bad things that he's done, which would win?
Sefer Shmuel Aleph, as presented to us, the good things are summarized in three verses at the end of chapter 14, and the bad things are described from chapter 15 to 20 to 31.
Right.
So from a basic perspective, if you're in journalism and you're writing it and you're publishing a newspaper and you need to determine the value in the message, what do you use? What's the criteria used to determine the importance of a story? Column inches. How many column inches devoted to Shaul's positive act? And how many column inches devoted to Shaul's fear and paranoia?
Much more fear and paranoia.
Did the commentators have a sense of like what we write is going to be looked at and written and read forever, and, you know, so...
Chazal certainly did. Chazal certainly did. Right. I don't know about the commentaries, but Chazal certainly did. I mean, it's the Omid Rishay Chazal that I just shared with you.
Remember to paint a picture that, in the end, we all have a neshama,
not on the Pshat, not when you're dealing with the Pshat of Tanakh. At the end of the day, we need to come back to the text. No, I think the answer is we're going to jump one more parak. Going to jump one more parak into Shmuel Bet, because I think the answer lies in not Shaul but in David. So we're going to take one more jump into Shmuel Bet, parak Aleph. In the Hebrew English, it's on 365. Shmuel Bet Perek Aleph. Do you have it in this one?
Yeah.
Okay. Vahi acharei mot Shaul died. The David shav miakotet Amalek. Story that we haven't read yet. That David got distracted in his battle with Amalek while Shaul was in Har Gilboa. Vayeshev David betziklag yamim shanim. And David comes back to Ziklag, and there he is waiting. Vayibayom ha-shlishi, v'hinei ish ba min ha-machane me'im Shaul uvgadav kru'im va'adama ha-rosho. There a man comes to report from the battle with Shaul. His torn clothes and dirt and mud on his head. Vayibavu'ol David vayipol arza v'ishtach. Sees David, falls on his face, and he bows down. Vayomer lo David, ey mizet tavo, where are you coming from? I have escaped the battlefield from the battle with Israel. Vayomer elav David, me ayah davar in aged nali. Vayomer asher nas ha'am min ha'milchama, v'gam harbei nafal min ha'am v'yamutu. The people of Israel are fleeing from the battlefield. Many have died on the field. V'gam Shaul v'Yonatan b'no metu. And Shaul and his sons have died. Now, the rest of this story for now for skip, because it'll distract us way out of context. Okay, I'm going to skip the rest of this part. We're going to turn the page and jump to Pasuk Yud. So David has just been informed by this Na'ar of the death of Shaul and his sons. Read? Mm-hmm. So here's what happens next. Some of the most famous psukim in all of Sefer Shmuel. Vayikonen David et hakina hazot al Shaul v'Yonatan b'no. David then sung, mourned, composed the following lamentation to mourn the death of Shaul and his son Yonatan. Right, what we refer to as Kinat David, David's mournful lamentation for the death of Shaul. Pasuk Yudchet. Vayomer, l'lamed b'nei Yehuda kashet, hinei k'tuva al sefer ha-yashar. In order to teach the children of Israel how to use the bow and arrow, this song is written on the book of Sefer HaYashar, whatever Sefer HaYashar means. In other words, it's recorded and left as a legacy for the people to read, to learn, to understand, and as a paradigm. Hatzvi Yisrael. Now, this is poetry, so the moment we jump into poetry, you kind of have to work with a different cup, or a different head. Hatzvi Yisrael means, the word tzvi, which is a deer. Reference for a deer, but in this case, it's also the notion of the one who is desired, the one who is beloved. Hatzvi Yisrael, al bamotecha chalal, on the high places have fallen. Ech naflu gibor. How the warriors have fallen. Al tagidu begat. What is gat? Gat is the Plishtim city. Don't tell the Philistines. Don't tell them in Plishtim. Al tevaslu b'chutzot Ashkelon. Don't let them know in the plains of Ashkelon. Pen tismachna b'not Plishtim, pen ta'alozna b'not arelim. Because the death of Shaul will cause the Plishtim to celebrate. And we don't want that. Haray b'Gilboa. The mountains of Gilboa, which of course was the site of the battle. Al tal. Don't allow those mountains to see the dew. Va'al matar alechem ustei trumot. No more rain upon you, do I decree. Kisham nigal magen giborim. for there the shield of the mighty warriors has been destroyed. Beli Mashiach Basham, void of the one anointed with the oil. Midam Chalalim, from the blood of the fallen. Mechelev Giborim, from the fat of the heroes, the strong, the warriors. Keshet Yonatan lo nasag achor, the bow of Yonatan would not retreat. Vecherev Shaul lo tashuv rekam, and the sword of Shaul will not come back empty-handed. Shaul v'Yonatan, Shaul and Yonatan together, Hane'avim, beloved, connected, devoted to each other, V'Hane'imim, the sweet ones, B'chayehem, in their lifetime, V'Motam, lo nifrad, so connected in their lifetime, and not divided in their deaths. Minisharim kalu, lighter than eagles, U'me'arayot gaveru, and stronger than lions. Benot Yisrael, El Shaul Pchina, daughters of Israel, cry over Shaul. Hamal Bishchem Shani Madanim, Hamale Adi Zahav Alevushchem, who enabled you to have wonderful colors and garments and clothing from the spoils of war, I would assume. Ech Naflu Giborim, how the mighty ones have fallen. In this war, Yonatan Abba Matecha Chalal, Yonatan on the high places has fallen. Tzarli Alecha Achi Yonatan. My particular pain is for my brother Yonatan. Na'amta li ma'od, nifla'atan avatcha li mi'avat nashim, whose love for me, devotion to me, was greater than to a to women. There's a whole discussion about that, which is not our issue. I'm by for a second. Saved his life many times. Ech naflu giborim v'yavdu kli mochama. How could the mighty ones have fallen? How could the heroes have fallen? And the tools of war, the kli mochama, been lost? So here's an interesting exercise for you. How many times in this parak, just these psukim, Yud Tet to Chav Zayin, has David described Shaul as a gibor?
Well, David often showed respect to Shaul.
Respect is one thing. I'm not looking for respect. I want to know how many times he describes him as gibor. Because remember, their issue is, will the real Shaul please stand up? Is he a pachdan or a gibor? Okay, in Sefer Shmuel Aleph, for 15 prakim, we've described him as a pachdan, and suddenly in 5 psukim, he's described as a gibor in at least 5 places.
Gibor,
gibor, hero, strong warrior, gibor chayil.
Right, he did win battles.
Again, that's not my issue. My issue is the perspective. I know he won battles. It says in Perek Yudalit, well, he expanded the boundaries of Israel. I'll come back to the question. The question was, for 15 chapters, we've described Shaul as a coward. In 4 psukim, we devoted to describing Shaul as a warrior. And now, Chazal come along and say, at his moment of death, this great warrior is going to be with me. And I ask the question, is he a coward or is he a warrior? In 15 chapters, we described him as a coward. And now in 4 psukim, David describes him as a warrior in 5 times. Ech naflu giborim in pasuk yutet, magen giborim magen Shaul in pasuk chaf, midam chalalim mechedev giborim in pasuk chaf bet, ech naflu giborim again in pasuk chaf hey. There's another one that I missed. Pasuk of Zion, Ech Naflu Giborim, Pasuk of Zion. So that's already 5. And then there's one more that I noticed when we were reading that I didn't have, which was Gaveru, a different form of the same word. So it's 6. It's 6 different places and 5 psukim. So here's the thesis. I think Chazal described Shaul as a Gibor.
Because David does.
Right.
David's the humble?
Now the question is, why did David do it? And that's the bigger question. Why is the legacy of Shaul preserved for eternity in the language of David HaMelech, who writes the final lamentation for Shaul, as a warrior, as a gibor, as a leader, as strong, as a hero? There's not one hint, not one word of any of the fear that has been the subject or the morale. Sins of Shaul, or the challenges of Shaul and David, and the pursuit of David, and the forcing of David into exile. And David has confronted Shaul more than once. He's confronted Yonatan. He's confronted Shaul twice. Confronted Yonatan twice over the fact that David has been trying to kill him. David is in hiding only because Shaul's been trying to kill him. It's a civil war that's been going on for years. And in this moment of end of story, David comes along and he says, Ech naflu giborim. So to put it succinctly, which version of Shaul HaMelech is objective, and which version of Shaul HaMelech is objective, and which version is subjective?
Maybe David is coming along and forgiving Shaul for all that he did to him.
Okay. So in other words, you're suggesting that that Shmuel Aleph presents an objective picture of Shaul the coward, and David HaMelech,
After he dies,
tries to
clean the slate,
change the image, forgive him, let's move forward. Okay? Revisionist history. Right?
He wasn't always a coward.
Okay, but that's four psukim at the end of Perek Yadalit, and now I got 15 prakim from Perek Tedvav to Perek Lamed Aleph. So, one possibility, and I think that there's a lot of truth to this suggestion, is that all of what you're suggesting is that David HaMelech, it wasn't an accident, it was a conscious decision to preserve a legacy of Shaul that presented a different side of Shaul. We've spent 16 chapters talking about the negative side of Shaul. It's time, man is gone. Okay, let's leave a positive legacy behind. That's a possibility. I'm not 100% comfortable with it, because at the end of the day, it's still a little bit of a whitewash, not necessarily in the hands of Chazal, but maybe in the hands of David. Okay, but still very... let's put it this way. If you were listening to David's speech, if you were there, if you had lived through Shaul, and you were listening to David's lament, so true you get that David refused to kill Shaul, and that David always respected him and gave him that, but there's a difference between that and calling him a gibor when he died after 15 months or 2 years or 3 years of playing the coward, right? You still, from the days of Goliath, the issue of Shaul's fear has been overwhelming. So a possibility is that he's trying to clean up the legacy. Another possibility is something which he himself says. If you go back to the beginning of this kina, he alludes to something which is really pasuk I kind of glossed over, but it's an important one. That's pasuk Yud Chet. Vayomer, right? Or let's start from Pasuk Yud-Zayin. Vayikonen David et hakinah hazot al Shaul vayonatan beno. David lamented this lamentation for Shaul and his son Yonatan. Vayomer, he said this, lilamed bnei Yehuda kashet. Hinei ktuva al sefer yasha. What does lilamed bnei Yehuda kashet mean? What's a keshet? Well, keshet giborim. Well, right? The bow. Well. The bow, for the bow and arrow. Lamed b'nei Yehuda keshet. To teach b'nei Yehuda the bow. What does that mean? So look at source 8. Vayomer lelamed bnei Yehuda kasha. This is Rashi on that pasuk. Vayomer David, me'ata shenaflu gibore Yisrael. Now that the great warriors of Israel have fallen, tzrichim bnei Yehuda lelamdam milchama v'limshoch b'kashet. It's my job to teach bnei Yisrael how to
fight
a war, and how to use the bow and arrow. In other words, two things are implied in that statement of David. One, Shaul is gone. Who is now responsible for the army of Israel?
David.
So there's an element of continuity that takes place between the transition from Shaul to David. David knows it. David anticipates it. He's been told. He's been anointed. It's been the subject of the whole fight between Shaul and David. This war was a failure. Upon whose shoulders is it going to fall to rebuild?
David.
That's number one. Number two, why does he emphasize the lamdam kashet? Vayomer, in the middle of this lamentation, his lamentation is designed for the purpose of lelamed bnei Yehuda kashet, to teach bnei Yehuda the art of the bow. Why is that the lament of Shaul the means to teach bnei Yehuda the bow?
That's how Shaul died.
Shaul died by the enemy's bow, which means that we need to up the ante of our military prowess on the one level, and that's going to fall to me. And on the other hand,
Shaul died of his own sword, and he killed himself.
That's not the issue here, and that's not really even addressed in this parak. It's that he died, not necessarily how he died. He died in battle. But more importantly, if you are the leader and you're taking over after the years of Shaul, what's the most important message you need to convey to the people?
Well, you need the military.
The military hasn't changed hands, right? It's still the same army. It's the same generals. It's the same people. David's first and most important act is going to be, unfortunately, after 4 years, four more chapters of civil war between the followers of Shaul and the followers of David, when they finally get to realizing that David is the true king of Israel, right? The first act is going to be to unite the people under one banner.
Right.
And that means assuming leadership over the people who were loyal to Shaul. Right? You've got to figure out a way to play the continuity. And for David to pick up where Shaul left off. So you can sit there and talk about the 3 years in which Shaul tried to kill David and create the rift and created a civil war and army of David against the army of Shaul and forced David into exile. Or you can retool the relationship, emphasize the years of, skip the whole period of time, go back to Shaul the warrior, and the Shaul the general, and Shaul who led the people into battle, and say, okay, so now we've had our first major defeat, it's going to fall on me to pick up those pieces, and I am going to continue the legacy of Shaul. I see Shaul as a hero, I see Shaul as Mashiach Hashem, and you do not need to worry, I am going to pick up where he left off.
That's a strategic play. Right?
Correct.
That's not how to explain how he gets to Gan Eden. If that's, you go back to the...
So what I'm suggesting to you is that Chazal picked up on David's... one possibility. I'm going to offer a second possibility in a second. But one possibility is that Chazal picked up on David's depiction of Shaul and said if David left that as the legacy for Shaul, that's the legacy we're going to focus on. And Chazal did not introduce that, call it revisionism, David did. And Chazal picked up on it, right? David is the one who writes Tehillim, and David sets the tone of Sefer Shmuel. So that's one possibility.
Wouldn't Chazal really, they're Chachamim, and they really know what the truth is?
Well, David knew much more than Chazal did. Right? In that regard, David knew much more. David lived it.
Okay.
So right. They're going to follow. They're following in the footsteps of David. Right. We do too, by the way. Every time we open up a siddur, we follow in the footsteps of David. David has as created the language of tefillah, so not a surprise.
Whether or not he's saying it as a, you know, devout leader, but like, you know, good, humble, whatever person versus a strategic, you know, military.
I think there's a strategic decision. I think there's a real perspective of if you had to pick which part of the story to emphasize, let's go back to Shaul before, right? The Shaul, the leader, Shaul, the gibor, Shaul who fought against Yavesh Gilad. It's not an accident that it's Yavesh Gilad who comes to Shaul's moment of respect. Let's focus there and not on Shaul of Goliath post. Okay, I get it. I think there's a deeper answer, but we're going to get to that in a second. Yes?
Is it also a way of elevating what the Melech is and what it means so that, because he's going to be stepping into those same shoes of the strength of being a king?
Give 1 second and I'll answer your question.
Okay.
Sorry, you repeat that?
Now, is it a way of like elevating what the king means, and so that he's stepping into the shoes of the Melech also, and so looking at the positive makes that position stronger also.
100%. I think anything that in which we pick up from Kinat David, David's perspective. I think here's the takeaway. I think that the legacy of Shaul is going to be written by David. That's a fact, right? The legacy of Shaul for the people is going to be written by David. So the fact that David presents it in a lament of a gibor can't be an accident. It cannot be an accident. So one possibility is that it's David's intentional decision, strategically, emotionally, leadership perspective, to present the Shaul that he would like the people to remember. Because it's in the best interests of the people, it's in the best interests of him, and in the end, that's part of Shaul's life. You can choose to focus on the last 3 years of his failure, or you can choose to focus on the first 50 years of his success. That's David's perspective.
I got an idea.
Yes.
So, in modern terms, you might say, you know, the melancholy that Shaul was expressing was part of a mental illness.
Yes. Brought on by the paranoia of David's threat.
Well, okay.
Or that it was undermined there. Okay, but now that
trigger.
Right.
But
triggered by.
But if someone is mentally ill and they have, you know this is, he has a psychotic episode and it's carrying through, you kind of dismiss it because it's a health issue.
Okay.
Right? It's a mental health
issue. That's a modern perspective on it.
Well, that's what
that's
where I started. But you can excuse it.
Correct. Correct, and
right.
I think that
it's like
that fits into
alcoholic someone, right? It's
right.
You can find an
so you
got to
go back
who they were.
Correct, so you got to go back to who they were, which was 15 chapters ago.
That's why I think the expression of whitewash seems like that's not the truth. You're saying things just to make it look nice, but it's not the truth.
Correct.
This is based on
what a deeper understanding and correct. That's exactly what I'm saying. Is that Chazal? Right, if before you read Kinat David, all you have is the picture of Sefer Shmuel and Chazal's picture of him sitting in Gan Eden, and you have to wonder, okay, were they out to lunch or were they kind of just disconnected from the story? Once you realize that that's really coming from the story of David's picture of Shaul and his legacy, and six different times describing Shaul as a gibor, then there's something to it.
Is he showing respect for Shaul or respect for Malchut?
Does
both.
Does it have to do with death?
Both.
I
was going to originally, before we came to Kinat David, I was going to say, you know, it's like the story of, before we sort of went here, I was going to say it's like, sometimes in the Hesped, you kind of gloss over the darker periods of somebody's life in order to focus on them. But that's for the purpose of the Hesped. This is much more than a Hesped. Right? This is a Kina preserved in writing in a text that David writes in Sefer Yashar and preserves for legacy for to come because it's going to define Shaul's legacy for the people. Right? That's what he writes. That's what's much bigger. It's much bigger than a eulogy, but it's the same principle.
So it's very interesting. So who wrote it? So you have a Navi who's writing
David.
It.
Or the Kinah is written by David. The Sefer is written by a Navi.
Right, but it's written by a Navi for which audience?
Oh, second option. Correct. Now you've brought me into the second option. Okay? And the second option is, in some way, I mean, the first option I think is more, is very compelling because it fits into the story of David. But I think there's another whole picture here. And that is to remember that Tanakh is not written as a book of history. Tanakh is not a history book. Tanakh is a book written by Nevi'im. And the Nevi'im had a very particular goal, agenda, focus, message they wanted to reflect. And this may sound almost harsh on Shaul, but let me put it this way. Go back to Perek Chet for a second. Go back to Perek Chet and Shmuel Aleph and Pasuk Gimel. This whole story with Balatov, right? We started with this whole discussion of Balatov. The whole story of Balatov starts with Pasuk Gimel, in which we are told V'Shaul Hesir Ha'avot V'Dayidonim Min Ha'aretz. At a much earlier time, Shaul, in his campaign to rid the country of idolatry, had removed all of the idolatrous activities of the Ov and the Yidoni from the land of Israel. When did that story take place? When did we learn that story? Chapter 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, or 27. They're your choices. What point in time did we learn the story of Shaul, who had gone to war against the idolatry of Israel by removing the Ov and the Edoni from the land? We're told this is in past tense. When did it happen?
Earlier in his career.
It would have to have been earlier, right? Okay, so when?
Almost the beginning.
Find it. Don't spend too much time looking for it. Okay? Sylvia, help us out here.
I don't think it's in there.
It's not in there. You won't find it. You won't find it. It's not recorded anywhere. It simply is not in Sefer Shmuel. That is a major piece of Shmuel's, of Shaul's life. He, in an attempt to live... Can we just take that outside, if you don't mind?
I'm outside.
Okay.
Did I call you?
Fine, I'll be up in a few minutes. Fine.
I didn't mean to call you. Okay, I called you. Okay, I'm outside.
Where was I?
You couldn't find it.
A major part of Shaul's life, and you won't find it in Sefer Shmuel. And a major positive part of Shaul's life. Shaul fought the battles of Israel, expanded the borders north and south, at Perek Yudalad, fought against the Amalek and the Plishtim and the Ammonim, and he rid the country of the idolatry, a campaign that Shmuel Hanavi had started to remove the idolatry from the land of Israel, Baal and Ashtoreth and Ov and Yidoni and all of the trappings of Sefer Shmuel. It's a major piece of Shaul's life. Not a whisper anywhere in Sefer Shmuel. What happened to it? Answer: Sefer Shmuel is not a history book. It's a book of the Navi's account of, and this is Shmuel HaNavi, Chazgad HaNavi, Natan HaNavi's account of the kingdom of blank. Now wait.
Is it even
two? No. It's only references here. There are other stories of Shaul also that are not here. His war against the Givonim, and there are other pieces of the story as well. We have books of Tanakh that are written as the account of the book of the kings. So we have a book of Sefer David. Divrei David. Take a look at source 9. This is in Divrei Yamim. This is, but Divrei Yamim, as I told you, is a repeat of much of Nevi'im Rishonim. Divrei David HaMelech HaRishonim BaAchronim. The words of David, early and latter, meaning the story of David, the beginning of his story, the latter part of his story, Malchut David, Sefer Malchut David, the book of the kingdom of David. Hanam k'tuvim al divrei Shmuel aro'eh, v'al divrei Natan Navi, v'al divrei Gad haChozeh, are written in the book composed by three Nevi'im, Shmuel, Natan, and Gad. Divrei David, Rishonim v'Achronim. Because that's the story of David. Next pasuk. Divrei Yomim, source 10. U'sh'ar divrei Shlomo, ha'rishonim v'achronim. Alohem k'tuvim al divrei Natan and Navi v'al nevuat achiyah shenoli u'v'chazot yedo ha'chozeh al Yerevam b'Nevat. The story of the king of Shlomo, Malchut Shlomo, written by Natan, by Achiyah Shilri, by Yedoah Achozeh, up until the days of Yerevam and Nevat. And then the books of Yerevam, and then the stories of the rest of the kings, the split of the kingdom, Rechavam and Yerevam, etc. So I have a Divrei David, Rishonim Achronim, I have a Divrei Shlomo, Rishonim Achronim, I have Sefer Melachim. Where is the verse that says, Ela Divrei Malchut, Ela Divrei Shaul, HaRishonim VaAchronim?
Doesn't exist.
There is no book, part of book, section of a book that is described as Divrei Shaul Arishanim VaAchronim. There's Divrei David, Divrei Shlomo, and then the Book of Kings to chronicle the remainder of the kings until the end of Malchut Yisrael. There is no book. So now, we've studied virtually the entire Sefer Shmuel Aleph. The primary focus of Shmuel Aleph has been Shmuel and Shaul. David is the antagonist to Shaul. The story of Shaul doesn't begin until Sefer Shmuel Bet. Sorry, David doesn't begin until Shmuel Bet. So if you and I were assessing Shmuel Aleph, Shmuel Bet, we would say Shmuel Aleph is a story of Divrei Shaul. Right? Divrei meaning Divrei Hayamim, right? This chronicle of. And Sefer and Shmuel Bet is the story of David, in which case we have a very strange picture of Shaul. But there is no verse that says Divrei Shaul Rishonim Achronim. Go one step further. Take a look at Divrei Yamim for a second. Yeah, Divrei Yamim is extraordinary. Let's take a look at the beginning of Divrei Yamim. We have 3 minutes left? Yeah, we can do this in 3 minutes. Divrei Hayamim is very end, last book of Tanakh, and we're going to look at Divrei Hayamim Aleph. So very beginning of Divrei Hayamim, it's the last book of Tanakh, last two books of Tanakh, all the way at the end. Okay, now there's a lot of lists in Divrei Hayamim because it was written in the time of Ezra and Baicheni, and they loved lists. Ezra, Nehemiah, Divrei Hayamim, they loved lists. Just ask my son, he'll tell you how many lists he had to memorize in the Chidon, because there were parts of this that were on there. They love lists and by chain. Adam, Shed, Enosh, Kenan, Mahalal. Yeah, right. We're starting with Adam Arishan. Just list names, Yichus, lineage, over and over again. Bnei Yisrael, Yaakov, tribes of Israel, lists, names. Perek Gimel, Perek Dalet, lists and names. Perek Hey, lists of names. Bnei Reuven, Bnei Gad, Bnei Menashe, lists of names, lists of names. Perek Vav, list of names. Okay, all list of names. Perek Zion is a list of names.
What's the point of all the list of names?
That's what they had. They liked. They wanted to chronicle everybody's lineage. Fine. Perek Chet is a list of names. Perek Tet is a list of names. And so the story really begins. And Perek Tet is all list of names. Correct?
Yeah.
With me? All the way through. And so the story begins in Perek Yud. Divrei Hayamim starts in Perek Yud. Okay? Mm-hmm. Everything up until Perek Aleph to Tet is all lists of names. Story of Divrei Hayamim begins in Perek Yud. Uflishtim nilchamim beYisrael v'yanas ish Yisrael mipnei plishtim v'yiplu chalalim b'har Gilboa. V'yidbeku plishtim achrei Shaul v'achrei banav v'yaku plishtim et Yonatan v'et v'nida v'et Malkishua b'nei Shaul. Where does the story of Divrei Hayamim begin?
Saul's death.
There is not one chapter or one word of the story of Shaul HaMelech until the story of Shaul's death. The entire book of Shmuel Aleph is simply deleted.
The best he gets is David's verses.
In Shmuel, in Divayam, yeah. Right? Why? So this is what I'm saying to you. And that is that in addition to everything else, the story of Sefer Shmuel, Aleph and Bet, and the story of Divayamim is the story of Malchut David, not Malchut Shaul. And therefore, the story of Shaul as presented to us is the story of how David ends up on the throne instead of Shaul. That's the only emphasis here. And all of the rest of it is trappings to get to Divrei David. Because it's written by the Navi. So it's not a history book, it's a historiography. It's a book of prophecy. It's a book of religious assessment. And of religious assessment and spiritual assessment, because Shaul failed, he doesn't get the book he deserves, so to speak. He doesn't get the writing of all of his wars and all of his battles and all of his acts of gvura and his greatness and his strengths and his the effort to rid the country of idolatry, etc. We get three verses of who he is as a king, and then the rest of the story of how we got from the great expectation of Shaul to David, because the story is the story of David. If we were writing the story of Shaul, we'd write it differently. David wrote the story of Shaul. That's Kinat David, because David, in the world that he was operating, he was coming after Shaul. He needed to preserve the story of David, and the story of Shaul was so much bigger than what we are told in Sefer Shmuel. And there are hints, there are references here and there. Shaul had gone to war with the Ovid and the Yedonit to rid the country of idolatry. If that was a story in Sefer Malachim, it would have been five chapters long. If that was a story in the books of the Nevi'im, it would have been five chapters long. How Shaul went to north and south, and he removed the idolatry, and he went house to house, and he killed all the Ovid and the Yedonit, right? But it's not this Sefer is not the story of Shaul. The story of David. And therefore, we're only given a slice of the pie, the piece of the story that helps us understand why we went from Shaul to David, but the broader depth of the true a chronicle of Shaul's life, unfortunately for us, is not in Tanakh, because the Nevi'im chose not to preserve it. Get glimpses of it. And so in the broader canvas of it, we need to balance that picture. That's why I think Chazal go out of their way to kind of fill in the pieces that are there. They're there. They're not in the text. They're hinted at in the text. They're not the primary focus, because this is not the story of Shaul. This is the story of David.
Interesting. When did the invite Shmuel out?
Unclear, sometime during the period of, well, remember, Shmuel wrote the first part and he dies.
Yeah,
so he writes it before he dies.
I got that. So when's it like published and disseminated? And
then we don't know.
Yeah. We don't know about Shmuel.
Sometime during the period of Tanakh, but exactly when we don't know for sure.
But is it meant to influence the current generation?
You can keep them. I don't mind if you want to keep the source pages. I just there's a Monday morning, Wednesday night shift. The Wednesday night people like to keep them. Monday morning like to give them back. So you do what you wish.